Going back to, I said one day just write something about the first executive job you get is a senior level position in an $80+ billion organization, because I was freaking out this entire year about all of these initiatives, but I knew it had to be done.
Well, let us know when you write your book about that. You know, we want to hear about the book launch once you're ready.
Just to let everybody, it should be called "It Will Be Okay."
Yeah, exactly. There you go.
It will be okay.
Yeah, I think people could use it.
That's right. So one of the things I also kind of realized early on is, as we brought these two organizations together, I looked out at the field, and of course I looked at the demographics of what we had from both sides of the institution. And then of course we kind of looked at the ranks. Normally what people do in terms of mid-level, senior level, executive, women, you know, the whole shebang. And the thing I feared the most was that normally in a talent planning process, key leaders would know of associates. Like, you would know of who is performing well, who's not. You would have some kind of tally on them, right? Some kind of understanding of these individuals. But when you're going through a merger, a lot of that is out the window.
Yeah.
Right? And especially if at the end of the day, you know, we were trying to create these hypo programs that our executives need to sign off on, well, we got executives from both sides of the house and they only know what they know.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll be honest, man, that absolutely just kept me up at night. I was like, oh my gosh, this is not going to be good. So I had to start evaluating a little bit about what were we doing currently to support this system that doesn't allow for our organizations separately to be whole. And then will these systems also create even more trouble, you know, when we try to bring this organization together to not allow us to be whole, to advance underrepresented talent and try to diffuse bias in these processes.
Yeah.
And so almost every system, every program, every experience, we started to look at how do we create a shared definition of diversity or inclusion? And what does that look like? What does it look like in our credit programs and our commercial programs? What does it look like in our learning and development experiences? Within our performance management system, do we have language, or do we have questions that may automatically exclude some people versus others? You know, we find it very, I'll give you an example. We find it very matter of fact to say, hey, what type of professional development have you been in? But if you think about it, there are people within roles that don't really even have that opportunity to participate in quote unquote professional development.
Yeah.
And depending on the type of organization you have, just so far, you know, I'll just speak to First Horizon. Some of those, or a majority, I won't say all, but a majority of those individuals that are in those types of roles are people of color. Mm-hmm. So you kind of start, you know, you have to start thinking about things like that. Like, what are we asking? What are we saying? And how is it inhibiting somebody and promoting another? And does that lead to the differentiation we see throughout the organization?
And so I just want to be sure I understand. So are you saying when you're looking at who is their potential to advance in the organization, and one of the ways you determine who might have the potential is by finding out what kind of professional development have you had? And if they've had a good amount, then they might be a good candidate. But you realize along the way, a lot of people haven't had that opportunity. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah.
So how would they even be tapped as a candidate if they didn't get the development in the first place?
Absolutely. Professional development links to one of the factors we talked about, a person's aspiration, mm-hmm. right? How developed do you want to be? Do you have that self-discretionary effort to go out and do things over and beyond your job, right? So, yeah, right. All of what you're saying, that's right.
Mm-hmm.
So, Bennett, that was one thing we ended up looking at, but we even expanded it out. You know, we also wanted to expand the visibility of talent across the organization, too. One of the things that we noticed within our own system, I don't know if other organizations are like this, is when we got ready to do talent and succession planning, we oftentimes ask leaders to only look down within their functional unit and say, you know, who's rising, who's coming up to be the next, you know, quote unquote, mm-hmm. the next.
Yeah.
But what we also realize is that those leaders rarely have visibility as to the other functional units that are part of this enterprise. And what I ended up noticing was there are leaders that were in other functional units who could be what we call enterprise leaders. Like, we could place Bennett in another functional unit, mm-hmm. and because of his aspiration to constantly be curious and develop himself, because of the jobs that he has done or his performance so far, he has a basic set of skills where he could thrive in this other department. Will he need a little upskilling? Absolutely. But you know what? It's better than starting from zero.
Right.
So what I also loved about that, so those are the types of things that we're looking at right now to really try to reevaluate our systems in place to encourage this kind of talent ecosystem that's a little bit more thriving and open and transferable between functional units. And I think I shared with you earlier, I had to find a way to articulate this point that was running through my mind to some of our senior leaders. And so what I ended up doing was I took succession and talent identification data from, 2 years or so ago. And I just demonstrated to them. I said, look, if we do our traditional process that we have always done, here's the visibility, here are the candidates that we will have in our talent pipeline. But if we were to revise some of these systems and look at this in a broader way, look at the percentage increase that you have of potential associates that can move up and throughout the organization. And they're like, oh my gosh, this is great. Mm-hmm. And so now we are in the early stages of executing on that and then making sure we implement effective processes and procedures. Because the other thing that we don't want to do is we don't want people to feel like this is a game, right? Mm-hmm. We don't want to put, metrics and other things where people can, because we got some smart people at the bank.
Yeah, they start gaming it. And love it.
In a good way.
Yeah, but, I get it. Yeah.
And they're very competitive too.
Yep.
Yeah, they'll figure it out. The unintended consequences, we don't want people to feel like they're a quota. We don't want people to feel like they were just a number or they had some hammy out that was not based on their skills and who they are. Mm-hmm. And not only because of their skin color or gender. We don't, because that devalues a person, I think, when that was the only reason you were selected was because of this, we needed to meet this quota. We're not trying to do that. And we don't want our associates to think that's what we're trying to do. So it's taken us a while because this is hard stuff, right, to do in an effective and balanced way. So going back to what I said earlier, we really are trying to think about how do we, as an enterprise, create a shared thought or definition around what does diversity and inclusion mean for all of us? And how does that incorporate into all the systems and practices that we do each and every day? And how will that help our organization thrive for another 100 years?